Are you aware that the past 14 years there has been a movement afoot to criminalize religious free speech? Today, Understanding the Times Radio investigates the silencing of free speech. Stay tuned.
All I know is that the implications of where this goes, the bottom line of it, would be to shut down and curtail any speech against anyone else's belief system. This is really troubling because, hey, Jesus stands alone. He said, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man cometh to the Father but by me." Will we even dare be able to say that? And anyone whose speech incites another to violence is then liable for hate crimes.
Today, on Understanding the Times Radio, we're exploring the treacherous notion of an international law which is specifically meant to curtail religious free speech, and specifically as it relates to the freedom of speech for the church here in America. Jan Markell and Eric Barger have been investigating this issue, and today, along with Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, you will be shocked at what they have discovered. Here now is Jan Markell.
Welcome to the program. So glad you can join me today. We're going to have a very interesting hour plus, actually, probably be doing a web bonus for this particular program. Have a very special guest as a part of the program, and my co-host Eric Barger is here, and he's going to be doing heavy lifting this hour. Let's just say that. Eric, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Jan. Glad to be here.
And let me just say by way of introduction, please, and I have a short introduction, then we're going to dialogue, we're going to play some clips. We're also going to play at least 20 minutes and probably more than that, a little bit later, that is. And that is a pre-recorded, but just a few days ago, interview with Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann. Let me introduce all of that by saying, are you aware that for the past 14 years, there's been a movement afoot to criminalize religious free speech? If it involves the religion of others, did you know that each year an influential Islamic group, not Protestant or Catholic, but an influential Islamic group, has spent millions of dollars promoting such an international law? So, why has our government now switched from opposing this movement to endorsing it? And how could the tragic terrorist raid at the CIA facility at Benghazi, Libya, that took the lives of four Americans, including Ambassador Chris Stevens, how could that have been used to aid this movement that undermines U.S. sovereignty and our Constitution? So we're going to be considering some of these issues in the even more treacherous notion of an international law which is specifically meant to curtail religious free speech, in particular, Christian freedom of speech right here in America. So that ultimately leads, and we'll get there eventually, to how is this going to affect apologetics, witnessing, even Christian publishing? How could some of these things be affected down the road? And down the road could be just in a very, very short time. So, Eric Barger, you're going to have to enlighten us on some of these issues. And where do we start? Do we start talking about what the OIC is?
I think that's the place to start, Jan. Since 1998, the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, it used to be called Islamic Conference, has each year tried to pass a binding resolution at the UN to make the denigration of religion of anyone else an international crime. And of course, they've not been able to get this passed with a binding resolution, but now they've kind of shifted gears, and we're going to get into that. So the Organization of Islamic Conference, or Cooperation as it's called now, is a confederacy of 57 Islamic states plus Palestine. And they speak together at the UN as if they were one voice. They are the largest, most pervasive, and some say the most imposing group of any kind that is at work today in the United Nations. Now, they passed a resolution in 2005. They began this back in the late 1990s. But in 2005, a resolution passed the UN. Of course, this is several years back, but the OIC pushed this through. It was their yearly resolution in 2005. It was actually Resolution 2005/3, if anybody wants to go read about it. And it was combating defamation of religions, and it was adopted by the UN Commission on Human Rights. So, Resolution 2005/3 is a non-binding resolution, but here's what it called for, and this is key to our discussion. The criminalization of any kind of speech or any kind of speech about religions or about religious figures that would be deemed in someone's eyes defamation or somehow offensive. So this resolution was about attempting to enforce international standards for what you and I have called, and what I think many people would understand, as a global blasphemy law. The idea that any speech about anyone's religious beliefs is now off the table. This means no public dialogue. It means that the mouths of those who might disagree with the tenets of someone else's religions are now shut. And biblically minded Christians immediately recognize that this measure is at odds with both what the Old and New Testament teaches.
All right. We're obviously going to be running into some First Amendment issues here, Eric. So how and what in the world is going to be happening to First Amendment?
Well, our U.S. First Amendment, you know, stands very uniquely in the world and gives us a lot of freedom of speech. And it was the idea of freedom of speech and assembly. And as is going to be pointed out in the interview that I did with Michelle Bachman, it's not the speech that everybody agrees with that's protected. It's speech that people don't agree with that's protected. She made a great point, as you're going to hear in just a few minutes. But the whole idea of the First Amendment, that stands in the way of anything like a global blasphemy law. Now, in the past, our U.S. officials have denounced these symbolic resolutions by the OIC. At the Understanding the Times conference in 2011, in fact, I quoted Hillary Clinton. She's made statements again and again. 2009, she made a statement that an individual's ability to practice his or her religion has no bearing on others' freedom of speech. In 2010, she said nearly the same thing. She said that the idea of a criminalization of speech would be a false solution that exchanges one wrong for another. So those are statements we'd agree with. But there's a new tactic that was introduced back in 2005, the same year they got the most obtrusive resolution through the UN so far at that point. That was a 10-year plan that the OIC put out. And they're willing to spend 10 years to bring this to pass, and it's in the process right now. Before the listeners give a big sigh of relief that Hillary Clinton is saying the right things on this, and that our government has been standing against this kind of thing, the OIC's new tactic in their 10-year plan is not to seek an aggressive global blasphemy law, but instead to ask the nation states of the world to enforce hate crimes against anyone who speaks out against anyone else's religion. Now, if that doesn't make the hair on the back of your head stand up, folks, then something's wrong.
Okay, what about Islam saying something negative about Jews and Christians?
Well, you would assume that it would work both ways, yeah. That it would cut both ways, but we don't know that for sure. All we know is that the OIC is pushing this because they want no one to be able to publicly say anything in a negative manner about not only Islam, but about the Quran, about Muhammad, about Allah, about their ideas. And this is a 10-year plan that they have put in place. The OIC, again, some people believe the most influential group at the United Nations, to subordinate all freedom of speech laws in the world to make them subject under Sharia law to hate crimes. And this is what's began to take place in 2009. They really began to let the tactic change out of the bag. And it's very important for us to understand, no longer is it a global blasphemy law. It is now hate crimes. Jan, what it boils down to is they've gone from defamation of religion to the idea of combating intolerance through then bringing in the hate crimes legislation. The only adjustment really is the technique, because the end result that the OIC is going for is all the same. And now our Secretary of State and presumably the administration is embracing it.
Eric, I want to get down to nitty gritty here. I want to get down to just a little discussion here, maybe it's a minute or two, that I think it's going through the minds of some listeners. I mean, we can talk about defamation of religion and combating it. Getting down to where the rubber meets the road, why would somebody, and let's just take Hillary Clinton, because you're referring to Hillary a lot, and you're going to be referring to others, but let's use her. She's a woman from Arkansas who used to be an attorney, and granted, she rose to the White House. Why would somebody like Hillary Clinton let herself get embroiled in things that are so Islamic? I've done entire programs on her assistant, Huma Abedin, connected to the Muslim Brotherhood. Why do you think someone like Hillary is getting so enmeshed in all things Muslim Brotherhood that this is absolutely a danger danger to the nation at this point because of the intricate nature of Muslim Brotherhood, Washington, D.C., Homeland Security, National Security, the State Department, and the rabbit trails just keep going. And everybody's wondering, who's looked into these kinds of issues, what is in the mind of somebody like Hillary Clinton that she's willing to sacrifice the safety of the nation by getting so embroiled in Muslim Brotherhood?
Jan, it is simply baffling to me. To be honest with you, I've thought about that so much, and I've been living with this research now for several weeks that we're using on the air today. And somebody has her ear, obviously. Maybe she is convinced that she can be a catalyst for world peace, which, you know, if you understand Islam at all, you understand that the goal is not world peace. This is world domination. Yep. They have said it over and over. It's in the Quran. This has been the edict now since the 7th century. This is nothing new.
Right.
But they believe somehow that because they are touchy-feely understanding, I'm not sure. I really don't know. But I do know that this runs counter to our First Amendment. And everybody should be shocked that we have high officials in our government, presumably being okayed by the Oval Office, that this is all right for us to do, so, for us to just bypass the Constitution.
Could it be, in their minds, this is for the global good?
Well, sure. And that, you see, I mean, isn't the old statement by the socialist slash communist, for the good of the whole?
Mm-hmm.
Because if the rights of a few can be done away with for the good of the whole, and if we can have world peace out of it, if the carrot of world peace is being hung out there,
mm-hmm.
well, if she thought that she could be part of the bringing of peace through this by just doing away with a simple little thing like the First Amendment, well, that would be fine. But our First Amendment stands in the way of this, and you can tell that a lot of the folks in Washington today do not like our First Amendment.
You have a soundbite, Eric, and it's by a guy I really think a lot of, Frank Gaffney, and he's with the Center for Security Policy. If anybody understands, I'd love to have him around our studio table right now. If anybody understands the issues we're talking about, and by the way, he served in the Reagan administration, not sure exact position, but it was Undersecretary of Defense, I think. If anybody could probably give us a quick answer to some of these troubling questions, it's Frank Gaffney. You got a bite by him.
Yeah, this clip we're going to play, I really think, helps define the severity and the reason we're talking about not only the OIC, but also the connection to the Muslim Brotherhood. And he talks about the very things we're talking about here. So, folks, this isn't just something that we found on some obscure blog. This is something that people in the know, such as Frank Gaffney, are talking about. So let's hear that clip right now.
The OIC is, I think of it as kind of a multinational Muslim mafia. It is 57 states and Palestine that have come together to promote what is fundamentally the agenda known as Sharia. That is a totalitarian political, military, legal program that would force all of us, Muslim and non-Muslim alike, to submit to its barbaric, repressive, supremacist agenda. The OIC is seeking to do that first and foremost by trying to get the United States, which, after all, has a constitution that guarantees our rights, not just to freedom of religion, but to freedom of speech, by getting us to agree that, well, we really can't say anything that might offend Muslims. And the particular people that we're talking about, the OIC, the Muslim Brotherhood, as Eric Stackelbeck just talked about, now in the halls of power of the United States government, are very easily offended, it turns out.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you say something true about the Quran, about Muhammad's conduct, about Allah according to the traditions of Islam, let alone about Sharia. So this is a very worrying thing that Hillary Clinton is at the moment trying to find a way to bridge between our First Amendment rights under the Constitution of the United States and Sharia, which says you don't have those rights as a practical matter.
Everything Gaffney says, it's all profound. My concern is, it's called Islam fatigue. We've been hearing warning after warning after warning after warning about all these kinds of things, to the point where the listeners are glassy-eyed.
We already had a catastrophe, as you know. 9/11 should have been a wake-up call for us. And if we dare get fatigue over hearing about these warnings, it would be just as detrimental as letting down our guard and thinking that Khrushchev was our friend, no matter how many missiles were pointed this direction in the 1960s. They now have a bridge, Jan. There's a bridge going on here that to bring about this idea of the shutting down of free speech. UN Resolution 1618 is the bridge that Gaffney is referring to in this clip. And in March of 2011, that passed the UN. It went through from the UN Human Rights Council. Let's remember who's on that council. These wonderful human rights champions like China, mm-hmm. Cuba, Libya, Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, they introduced Resolution 1618 where it passed in the General Assembly. Now, what is that? Listen carefully, folks. They have taken the word defamation out. They have put the word incitement in. And anyone whose speech incites another to violence is then liable for hate crimes. In other words, your pastor, your radio host, your commentator, your newsman, your politician, whoever it might be, you, the guy in the street, me, the guy in the street. And OIC nations are now encouraging other nations in the world to prosecute and to engage in hate crime enforcement because they now have this teeth that's been given to them through the UN, and the Obama administration is now bowing to this idea as well, no pun intended, because now instead of using the word Islamic and terrorism in the same sentence, you're never going to hear that again. Because that would be viewed as hate crimes according to this particular resolution. Terrorism is barely talked about, certainly not in the way of Islamic terrorism, because this is looked at as hate speech.
Say, if you join me late, folks, you are listening to Understanding the Times Radio. And this particular hour, my co-host is sort of my guest at the same time. That's Eric Barger. We're going to be hearing a pre-recorded interview just a couple of days ago of Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann talking about some issues as it concerns global blasphemy. What's ahead? How could what we're talking about actually come into your personal life? How could it hit you square in the face as it concerns the pulpit of your church? How about witnessing? And how about book publishing? Okay, Eric, there I've sort of set that stage for you, because that's kind of what is on the mind, at least my mind, and I think by the time you're finished here, people are going to understand where I'm coming from, because in fact, one of our listeners is huge into witnessing. This is going to affect them. And you even indicate that you say, will a Christian publisher ever again dare print another book exposing Islam, Buddhism, Hinduism, the occult, witchcraft, or any of the cults? I want to start there. How does it affect that?
Well, I think this is ominous. The whole idea that there's a law that's been put through the United Nations, that's been passed by the General Assembly, that says that if you speak against someone's religion, it's a hate crime. I mean, obviously, a publisher's going to think, could I be sued out of business? Could I be imprisoned? Could I be censured? Would my books only be available just maybe in the United States? Although that's a big, obviously a big publishing target. It's not the whole world, as Christian publishers now have pretty much opened to them. Not the whole world, but obviously many of the countries. I mean, there's all kinds of questions. Jan, I've been in the middle of the night recently getting up and running for my notepad or going to get my smartphone to make an audio note. Things have come through my mind over and over, different things along these lines. This is such a Pandora's box, mm-hmm. such a can of worms. And it flies directly against Jude verses 3 and 4, that we're to contend earnestly for the faith. And part of that contending for the faith is something that apologists call polemics, and I don't want to get hung up in that. But polemics is the exposing of false religions. That's the Bible school term for it. We all understand the expose of the cults, or expose about the cults, or about false religions. And this would curtail this. So obviously, for my own, for the calling that's on my life, I'm concerned that that calling would be greatly hampered by a law like this.
Witnessing.
Well, you know, the person who's out trying to witness, think about what this would do to missionaries. If you dare say anything about someone else's religious belief system, somebody who would get offended by it could theoretically try to bring charges against you. Just think of the implications that missionaries or anyone willing to witness for Jesus Christ could be up against because of this.
How do you think a missionary organization will combat this?
Boy, that's really up in the air. Who knows? All I know is that the implications of where this goes, the bottom line of it, would be to shut down and curtail any speech against anyone else's belief system. This is really troubling because, hey, Jesus stands alone. He said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man cometh to the Father but by me. Will we even dare be able to say that? Some of the stuff that the first century church faced with the Romans, some of the things that the opposition they faced, we may be going to face the same kind of opposition here at the very end of the church age.
We're going to be coming right back. We've got a lot more to cover. We're going to be hearing from Representative Michelle Bachmann in the next segment. Please stick with us, won't you? Remember, we have mobile apps for your listening devices, and also this program is posted to our website right after you hear it on air. Coming back in just 2 minutes.
Did you know there are different ways to get a copy of this program? It is available online as a podcast that can be downloaded to your phone or computer. All this information is on our website at olivetreeviews.org, or call our office at 763-559-4444. That's 763-559-4444. Don't go away. There's a lot more to come.
If this program or any past program has touched your heart, you can always order a CD of our programs or become a CD subscriber for $15 a month. Have you checked out our online store? Whether you have gift-giving in mind or just expanding your own library, check out all our quality resources at olivetreeviews.org or call 763-559-4444 for assistance.
Because of the days in which we're living, there has never been a more important time to support Olive Tree Ministries, an organization committed to sharing the truth, even the inconvenient truth. The radio outreach in its 13th year is now heard on over 500 outlets, and the annual conference draws the largest crowd of its kind in North America. Jan Markell is a veteran discerner of the times, and the mission of their ministry is to encourage you to be the same. Tap into their weekly e-newsletter, free print newsletter, the cutting-edge online bookstore, or archived radio programs. And please consider being both a prayer and financial partner. In our troubled times, ministries often have to scale back, but that won't happen if you remain committed to sustaining the outreach. Your note of encouragement or tax-deductible gift will ensure that this ministry continues. Write today, Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota 55311. That's Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota 55311, or call 763-559-4444. 763-559-4444.
We encourage you to think about a gift that keeps giving even after you take up new residence in eternity. Have you thought about a legacy gift? Give us a call today if you would like more information. All such gifts are tax deductible. Olive Tree Ministries tries to be a voice for you in these last days, but we cannot do it without you. Give us a call at 763-559-4444, 763-559-4444.
It's game over if we who are in the non-Islamist world, if we lose our right to criticize what the Islamist does, because the Islamist tries to advocate Islamic Sharia law. And so anything that we would say in the future, once you criminalize anti-Islamic speech, anything that we would say that would be critical in any way of anything Islam does would be considered criminalized.
Eric Barger has been literally living inside our topic for weeks through his research and conversations with Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann. So let's get back to the program. Here is Jan Markell.
Okay, welcome back to the program. We're going to be playing a pre-recorded segment here just a couple of days ago. Michelle Bachmann, I've known her for some time, and she's been a ministry supporter as well for number of years, and she tries to attend some of my conferences. And Michelle, I even reported on this in the last 3 months or so. I used Waleed Shuabat as a guest to help explain, let's just say, the very delicate situation as it concerns Hillary Clinton's assistant Huba Abedin, married to Anthony Weiner. By the way, that in itself, very, very strange. Huma Abedin has Islamic roots, Islamic heritage, ties to the Muslim Brotherhood. She marries a Jewish man, Anthony Weiner, Congressman Weiner, who stepped down about a year ago because of some things he was doing online. How often can a Muslim Brotherhood person marry a Jewish man and get away with it, for lack of a better term? Eric, your thought on that?
It's a big question mark, Jan. I know. we thought the same thing. The more you and I have talked about it, I think it just leaves me with more questions to ask about the situation, but it is very strange.
All right, we have a clip here of Michelle, and this is a just a short four-minute clip from Values Voters Summit very recently. And Eric, you want to say any more about it?
No, it's a powerful clip, though, and it was my first tip-off that Michelle Bachmann was on the same page that I am about this research. And after I've lived with this stuff for the last month or so, researching it and trying to assimilate it into a package that would make sense to folks, I come across this clip of her, and that was the beginning of what's going to end up being our long conversation with her in the next few minutes, too.
Another factor in understanding this administration's policy of appeasement is its relationship with an organization you may not have heard of before, one of the largest, most powerful organizations in the world, and you should know its name. It's called the Organization for Islamic Cooperation, OIC, and so far has gone virtually unnoticed. Who are they? The OIC is the second largest intergovernmental organization in the world after the United Nations. The OIC claims they have authority to represent all Muslims, even those who live in non-Muslim countries like the United States. In 2005, this very influential Islamic organization published a 10-year plan of action in 2005 to implement its Sharia-based speech code requirements worldwide. Listen very carefully to what I'm telling you right now. It explains this week. They had a 10-year plan of action to implement their Sharia-based, Islamist-based speech code requirements worldwide. But don't take my word for it. They published this plan on their website in English so no one would miss their intent. They intend to internationally criminalize all communication or any communication or speech that's deemed by them to be insulting to Islam, even in countries like the United States. That, my friends, explains the story of this week. Islamic enforced speech codes. No one, not Muslims, not non-Muslims, not Americans, are allowed to say anything Islamists see as insulting to their religion. They intend to force us to kiss our freedom of speech and religion goodbye, and that's why we're being forewarned today. Unbelievably, last December, they succeeded with both President Obama and Secretary of State Hillary Clinton's help because they pushed through the United Nations the passage of UN Resolution 1618, which called upon all countries to enact laws preventing derogatory references to Islam, a clear violation of our First Amendment freedom of speech. And even before that, in October, last October, many prominent Islamic organizations wrote a letter to the White House where they urged our White House to do a complete purge of any federal training materials from references to the ideology of Islam, to ensure that all trainers in our U.S. military, our FBI, and other U.S. security agencies be retrained so they would be brainwashed in political correctness toward Islam. That's enforced Islamic speech codes here in the United States. And all done with the help of our President and Secretary of State. It took only days for the Obama administration to reply to this demand letter from the Islamists, promising to set up a task force with these same organizations to immediately begin this unprecedented purge of our counterterrorism training in every federal agency across the board. It's breathtaking, never been done before. But when members of Congress, myself included, started to ask questions about the identities of who these people were who were leading this purge in our government and what it was they were purging from our training materials, the Obama administration told us the information was closed. It was classified. We couldn't know who was behind this. I'm here to say, my friends, that we're now today very late in the game. We're quickly losing our sense of who we are as a nation, and we're losing our ability to identify our radical Islamist enemy. The time has come to stand unashamedly this week for our freedom and our values and draw an unmistakable red line for our enemies across the world.
I'm going to quote what Michelle Bachmann just said. This is breathtaking, what is happening. Can you shed some light on it?
I felt the exact same way as I was doing the research. I felt that my mouth opened further and further till I was gasping as I would read about this stuff and read the information and then search for the backup, the documentation. But she is nailing it here. And what we're going to do in the interview is then unpack some of these things and converse back and forth on the very things that she just basically gave us an overview of, a few bullet points for in the clip. And this has got to be heard by people who care about their freedom.
All right, Larry, let's roll that interview that Eric had with Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann.
Well, with me on the line right now is Representative Michelle Bachmann from our U.S. Congress from Minnesota's 6th District. She was also a presidential candidate, and she's a permanent member of the House Select Committee on Intelligence. Congresswoman Bachmann, how are you?
I'm doing great. And for people who aren't aware of what the Intelligence Committee is, we deal with the classified secrets of our nation. Primarily, our focus is on terrorism.
And I realize there'll be some things that we may kind of brush up against that you can't talk about. So we all understand that, and we're grateful for your service.
Thank you. It's an honor to be on the show today. I am a big fan. I've known Jan Markell for probably 30 years, and so I'm grateful to be on your show.
Well, it's we're grateful to have you, and we appreciate your input. Do you want to first comment on the Muslim Brotherhood and the OIC and any interconnection between the two? We have already kind of set the topic up, and we played an audio portion from the Values Voter Summit from your comments there. So we kind of have a setup for it, but would you like to expand on that any?
I'll be happy to. I don't know if you played the segment that said that the OIC is the largest group in the United Nations, and it's a group of 57 Muslim countries plus the Palestinian Authority, which is not a country, but they are a subset. So 57 governments that come together. And they have the largest voice in the UN, and their goals have been, for 10 years' time, has been to regulate speech. And their goal from 2005 to 2015, it's what they call the 10-year plan. This isn't some conspiracy theory. A person can go to the OIC website. It's written in English. This is their plan over a 10-year period to criminalize worldwide any speech that is disparaging of Islam. And, of course, that's completely contrary to the United States government First Amendment freedom of speech and expression. We're allowed to criticize anyone in this country, as we well should be. That's the reason why you have a First Amendment, not to protect speech that people like, but to protect speech that people don't like. We believe in free speech. The OIC, the 57 Islamic governments, are completely opposed to free speech. And they want all speech to be in compliance with Islamic law, known as Sharia law. And that's why their effort has been to criminalize speech that is against Islam.
You know, we often hear the term radical Islam, but this is just standard Islam. If you go back and read through the Quran, yes, and you look at Islamic history, this has been the modus operandi from the very from the time of Muhammad on.
That's right. And so what we'll find is an overreaction on the part of Islamists all across the world, and they will be rioting and upset about speech that we're making here in the United States, whether it's a pastor who does something with a Quran or whether it's someone who makes a movie that is saying things negatively about the Prophet Muhammad. It doesn't matter what it is, or whether it's a cartoon. We've heard about that in Denmark and in France. Whatever the medium, going back to the days of Salman Rushdie when he wrote a book that not that many people read, but it was considered against the Prophet Muhammad, those forms of speech, again, not just verbal speech, but written, a cartoon, a painting, whatever it is, if it is in any way construed as being against Islam, that's where the confrontation comes from the Islamist world. And they want to stop anyone in the world from saying anything negative about Islam, which means there is only one free speech right, and that would belong to the Islamists. Everyone else would lose their right of speech and expression. And the reason why this is important is because this is the whole game. It's game over if we who are in the non-Islamist world, if we lose our right to criticize what the Islamist does, because the Islamist tries to advocate Islamic Sharia law. And so anything that we would say in the future, once you criminalize anti-Islamic speech, anything that we would say that would be critical in any way of anything Islam does would be considered criminalized. That's why I say it is game over. The Islamists will have won everything. That's why they're willing to put 10 years into achieving this objective of silencing any form of dissent to Islam.
Well, and that goes right along with the idea that in Islam, or with the teachings of Islam, you're either a member of the House of Peace or the House of War. There is no live and let live or peaceful coexistence with those.
There is no tolerance.
There
is no tolerance for dissent or disagreeing in any way with the goals or beliefs of the Islamist. There is only one way.
Yeah, you're either with them or not, and there's no live and let live with it, that's for sure. Well, going right along with that, it's disturbing to me the things you said at the Values Voter Summit about the Homeland Security training and what's going on there and how now we're making our rules to match what Islam wants. Why don't you tell us more about that?
Well, I actually found out about this while I was running for President of the United States, that the FBI was now removing any materials from their training manuals for the FBI agents, the new agents that were coming up, anything that talked about Islam or anything in any way that could be construed as negative about Islam was completely removed from the FBI training manuals. And I thought, are you kidding? The people who are charged with keeping the American people safe aren't even able to know about this threat. So I contacted the FBI. I spoke with them. I became the only member of Congress who looked at all of the training materials. I requested that I be able to review all of the materials that were removed from the manuals. I read every word on every page. And most of this material was unclassified, even though they subsequently classified the material. And essentially, it was very simple. The materials explained Islam and the tenets of Islam and what Islam believes, and that was all removed from the FBI training manual. And if you go to Sun Tzu, who wrote The Art of War, he said there's two fundamental rules in warfare if you want to defeat your enemy. Number one, you have to know yourself. And number two, you have to know the enemy. And so if we are being targeted by Islamists for defeat, which the Muslim Brotherhood has stated, we have their memorandum of understanding from the early 1990s that said that their intention is to defeat the United States and to crush what they call our miserable house from within. If that's their goal, for us to fail to teach those who are charged with protecting us what the beliefs are and what their goals are, is nothing short of foolish, and even worse, it could be deadly for the American people. We have a letter dated October 19th signed by 57 Muslim organizations, not the 57 governments, but 57 Muslim organizations, written to John Brennan and to President Obama. They called upon President Obama to begin a task force to remove any anti-Islamic speech from the entire federal government. It requests that they remove any anti-Islamic documents like the FBI manuals and that sort of thing. Then it calls for removing the trainers. In other words, not only the documents, but silence the teachers. Those who were teaching about Islam, get rid of them. And they've done that. There's Colonel Major Dooley, gone. Steve Coughlin, gone. Presentations by Seb Gorka, gone. So these people have been purged. So the call was for them to be purged and for the libraries to be purged.
Wow.
Like the FBI's library.
So this is way beyond just the Homeland Security.
Oh, way beyond. Yeah, this would encompass the military. And there's an article that we have also from the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Martin Dempsey, who said that they were going to do the purge of the military training materials also. So FBI, which is the big dog over U.S. security, and the military, which is the big dog primarily over international security, both of them come out and say that they're going to purge their training materials so that the people who are tasked with keeping us safe can't know anything about the enemy.
That's trouble.
This is shocking.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what's even more shocking is that this letter went out October 19th. Does anyone know ever the American government to do anything fast, to act on something quickly? Within 5 days, this purge began. And the training materials and the people who were doing the training, the purge began almost immediately. And they chose 5 subject matter experts to be the ones to write out the criteria of what's going to get thrown out. And that's when after I left the presidential race And I made that request of the FBI that I could review all that documentation. That's another story in itself. It took me 2 months. They dragged their feet for 2 months, and I insisted, and got into a shouting match with the number two in FBI. Even after they told me that I would have access, they still wouldn't give me access. And I looked at the materials. And again, this is mostly unclassified stuff. It was like quotes from the Quran. I mean, that's really what it was.
Wow.
To explain Islam. So I was able to go through and see all of it. And so that's what I spent my whole year doing, was talking about this issue of what the OIC was trying to do with their 10-year plan and all of these efforts in the Obama administration. The only conclusion you could make is that they are embracing the 10-year plan and are supporting it. And that's why this October 19th document is so important, and it's why I need to get it for you, because that is proof positive. Every piece that's put into place is leading to one direction. This isn't deviating. It's leading to one direction. And that ultimate goal, it seems to be, is to allow for mandating, following every demand of the Islamist. And we know what their ultimate demand is.
Oh, yeah, Sharia law.
That's right. And so that's why we need to know what their belief system is. We need to know what they truly believe. That's why the most important thing a person could do in World War II during that conflict was to read the book that the leader of Germany wrote.
Yeah, mine.
Because he laid out very clearly what his intention was. Mm-hmm. He wasn't hiding it. Mm-hmm. The Islamist does the same thing.
Yep.
They do not hide it. They lay it out very clearly. But what we've never seen before is the United States aiding and abetting that goal.
Yeah, exactly. We've been the voice of freedom and of free speech and of, you know, all the other things that the Constitution and our country has stood for. But it appears we're going the other direction. We just happen to stand in the way of them getting to Israel. That's what it comes down to.
You talk about perilous times, which I talk about a lot on this program. America enabling our enemies? You don't want to go away. I have to take a one-minute break. When we get back, we bring Israel into the equation. Again, Understanding the Times Radio, I'm Jan Markell. My co-host this program is Eric Barger. We are interviewing Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, and we've been talking about, well, a lot of things as it concerns free speech. We're coming right back after a short break.
Anything that talked about Islam or anything in any way that could be construed as negative about Islam was completely removed from the FBI training manuals. And I thought, are you kidding? The people who are charged with keeping the American people safe aren't even able to know about this threat? Their memorandum of understanding from the early 1990s that said that their intention is to defeat the United States and to crush what they call our miserable house from within.
Thanks for joining us today for the broadcast. We hope you will tell your friends about us and remind them that all our programs can be heard online at olivetreeviews.org. We have a brief announcement, and then we'll be back to our conclusion on today's program.
We have entered the most significant time in modern history, and we want to see an even greater radio audience understand the times and become watchmen on the wall. We currently air on over 550 radio outlets across America, but in 2013, we want to reach even more people. Now is the time for the church to stand up and be a beacon of light to a desperate world. There are no answers to the legion of problems facing us now. The solutions only lie in the spiritual realm, so support Christian Radio. Think about a year-end tax-deductible gift to Olive Tree Ministries. Write us at Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota 55311. That's Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota 55311. Or you can call us business hours 763-559-4444. That's 763-559-4444.
This is our most sacred right, our right to speak, our right to practice our faith the way that we want to, the right to publish what we want to publish, the right to assemble and talk about whatever we want to talk about. That's freedom. That's the essence of freedom.
If you would like to know more about our theme today, we will tell you about our web bonus at the end of today's program. Now, back to Jan.
Welcome back to the program. We're going to continue with Michelle Bachmann here in just a moment. Eric, quite some incredible information Representative Bachmann's giving you.
Well, as I sat interviewing her and just taking notes at the same time and looking at the outline that I'd put together, I tell you, we need more voices like her. And it is shocking, especially considering our media is not talking about this or isn't animating any of these kind of things. But it is the common sense and the straightforward talk that we need today in our public life here in America. I just thank God for her. And I just hope we have more voices like her that are going to pop up.
Why don't you give us 30 seconds about what you've got in the web bonus coming up?
Well, the web bonus, we begin to discuss the whole affair of losing our ambassador and the three other Americans at Benghazi, Libya, and the attack that happened on September 11th of this year. Ms. Bachmann has some things to say about that, and I do too, and I've been doing research on it, and so had she. And so we discuss that and bring out some very important points. And also, we ask the questions that have yet to be answered by those in the administration and our officials and our government telling us exactly what happened and what was going on here in the United States at the same time when the attack was going on over there and they were watching it with a drone. So all those things are discussed in the web bonus. And if you're at all interested in Benghazi and the whole affair there, I think you need to hear what Michelle Bachmann has to say. Now, the next part of the interview we're going to hear in this segment, however, deals with Israel and what Michelle Bachmann has to say. Again, very important stuff.
Yeah. The reason why Israel has been able to survive, God's hand is the reason, number one. But number two is because 11 minutes after Israel declared her sovereignty in May of 1948, Harry Truman wisely recognized Israel and her sovereign right to exist. That was the best thing we could do. The United States of America was the economic and military superpower of the world at that time, and we have remained so up until the present time. This is the first time, in my opinion, that the United States of America hasn't had an unmistakable, strong hand of protection over Israel. It is my opinion that under President Obama these last 4 years, the hand of protection that the United States has held over Israel, I believe, has been pulled back. And that is to the peril of Israel, but I believe it's also to the peril of the United States.
Oh, I completely agree. In fact, I have a couple of messages where I say nearly word for word the same thing in saying that the hand of God is lifting off of our country because of what I believe will happen by the hand of God when we decide to back off on the support of Israel. We know that our Constitution certainly doesn't match what the OIC and the Muslim Brotherhood want, nor what the United Nations seems to be doing with Resolution 1618 and with some other things that are going on there. How much should we worry about executive orders and how they might become, instead of the legislation that should be passed through Congress, might become the law of the land that way?
Well, we've already seen that President Obama has given himself a very free hand at writing any executive order that he wants, because he said it himself that if the United States Congress won't agree with him, he'll just take matters into his own hand and he'll become his own Congress and he'll sign his own executive order and thereby put into practical effect a law that he wants to see passed. This is completely against our Constitution. But even more importantly, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, she helped to formulate and write and pass UN Resolution 1618, which calls for the criminalization of anti-free speech measures. This is very concerning that she went down that road. It doesn't specifically say Islam. It talks about religious speech. But let's face it, there's only one religion that the OIC, the Organization of Islamic Cooperative, cares about, and that's Islam. Hillary Clinton was involved from the very beginning in writing this resolution. She's already signed this. And while a UN resolution doesn't bind United States law, how in the world could the president allow the Secretary of State to sign a resolution that indicates that we are willing to take away the free speech rights of the American people? This is game over, as I said before, because when you limit the right to dissent from the American people, the founders made this the First Amendment because they understood this is our most sacred right, our right to speak, our right to practice our faith the way that we want to, the right to publish what we want to publish, the right to assemble and talk about whatever we want to talk about. That's freedom. That's the essence of freedom. That's the First Amendment. And that is what UN Resolution 1618, which Hillary Clinton signed, presumably with the affirmation of President Obama, and that's the first step in a big step toward taking away from you and me and all of your listeners our right of free speech and expression, religious practice, freedom of assembly, freedom of the printing press, but even more importantly, it will empower the Islamists to use that against us.
You said just what I was thinking there, that if Hillary signed it and helped to put it together, it is certainly the Obama administration policy.
That's right.
And that's what's very troubling. I wonder how many listeners understand about the executive controls over the Internet that were put in place in July and the National Defense Authorization Act and some of the other things that are taking place around us. Our national media, it appears to me, are derelict to duty. They're AWOL. They're not telling us about these things. We don't hear about them unless we go to the alternative media, and I'm just grateful that you continue to blow the horn loud about this stuff.
Well, your show is the alternative media, and I'm extremely grateful because you're right. The media has a shocking lack of curiosity about these matters, and in particular, they have a shocking lack of curiosity about the First Amendment, which allows them to print in the first place. I don't think they realize that they're about to be silenced if they don't start exposing these matters.
What's happening in Egypt, by the way, could play to our benefit because considering the fact that the Obama administration pushed for the Muslim Brotherhood, and now Morsi has set himself up as the next pharaoh without any of the judges or anyone else in their government being anyone of consequence. He now has said that his rule...
He sacked all of the military generals?
And that's it. I mean, if that's what we get when we get the Muslim Brotherhood, shouldn't the media be saying, you know, maybe this wasn't such a good idea, and this certainly doesn't look like democracy to us?
Well, that's right, because the black Islamic flag, you want to talk about Arab Spring? This is not Arab Spring. This is Sharia ascendancy, which means Islamic law ascendancy. Islam is rising in dominance all across the Middle East. Tunisia was the first country to fall to the Arab Spring, or what I call Sharia ascendancy. Today, there's a black Islamic flag flying over Tunisia. There's a black Islamic flag flying over Libya. The Muslim Brotherhood flag is essentially identical to the black Islamic flag. Turkey is ruled by an Islamist, Erdogan. You have Hezbollah, the terrorist organization, now in charge of and running Lebanon, which is essentially a proxy satellite of Iran. You have Hamas, which is a terrorist organization, and you have pressure now on Jordan from the Muslim Brotherhood to fall. What's frightening, and of course you have the specter of nuclear Iran. Not only that, we've just found recently new stories that are coming about even more facilities that they're suspecting are underground in Iran to obtain a nuclear weapon. Israel is quite literally surrounded now, and that would include also the pressure from the Sinai, from the south for Israel, from the Islamists as well. Israel is surrounded now by the black Islamic flag. If there was ever a time that Israel needed the strong hand of American support, it is today. And at the worst possible moment, President Obama has pulled back U.S. support. And in fact, I will say that President Obama, if you look at nearly every decision he's made about this issue, it's been to lift up the Islamist and to take down Israel, the greatest ally that the United States has. This is shocking. We've never seen anything like this before, and we have to pay attention right now because, quite literally, our times are in his hands.
I think if there was ever a time for us to pray for Israel, it is now. This is a time for us to pray for our leaders in our country as well. President Obama is not outside the hand of God. We need to pray for him, pray for the leadership, pray for our military, and, of course, pray for people like you who are standing up inside our government and who are waving a flag and saying, hey, listen, we have a problem here, and it has to be dealt with. And as you said, it is a perfect storm that's going on right now. To me, I think this is prophetic what we see going on. But at the same token, our job is to continue to hold forth with the truth as Christians with the Word of God. But we stand up with the truth and we stand with Israel. So it is a dangerous time. But at the same time, in kind of an odd way, it's an exciting time, isn't it?
Well, it really is. I'm a Christian, a believer in Jesus Christ. I came to know the Lord when I was 16 years old. And we know the scripture says, Maranatha, come Lord Jesus. And so we look forward to the Lord's coming. And I say as a Christian right now that, again, what the Bible tells us has been true for every nation in all time, every tribe, every people group, every tongue. The formula is the same. We are to personally confess of our sins, repent of them, turn away from our sins, turn toward a holy God that we serve, the God of the Bible, and we pray for our nation as well, and we repent on behalf of the sins of our nation. And as Christians, that's something that we can do. We can personally go before the Lord, and we can go before the Lord and pray for our nation. And so just like you prayed for our nation's leaders, we together, those who are listening to this show, we can be in prayer, prayer for our nation, pray for our leaders and those in authority. And the scripture tells us, pray for the peace of Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to stand for an undivided city of Jerusalem.
That's exactly right. That is the best wisdom, the best advice that we can get today, folks, right there. That is the voice of Michelle Bachman. She is representative to our Congress from Minnesota. Michelle, I sure appreciate you being with us again today. Thank you so much for giving up so much of your time.
Well, God bless you. God bless your listeners. And I just pray for continued strength for all of you on this show.
We're going to continue this discussion with Michelle Bachman, Eric Barger, and yours truly in our web bonus presentation. How do you access that? Well, if you have one of our mobile apps for iPhone, Android, iPad, or iPod, you'll never miss a program, as the app will automatically download each program and bonus podcast. Go to olivetreeviews.org, olivetreeviews.org, and then to radio, and you'll see all the details there. And Eric, you wanted to make a closing statement here.
You know, Jan, what we've talked about today is really the position of the current governmental administration here, and it runs counter to the edict of the Bible. And I believe that the Bible tells you and I we're to be defenders of the faith, and certainly every person listening, everybody who's born again, we are all called to be defenders of the faith. This is eerily similar to the struggle that the early church faced, and I believe here at the end of the church age, with the Antichrist coming, and he is coming at some point, what we're watching right now is literally setting the tone for that day, the day ahead. I just thank God that we are victorious through the cross of Christ.
Mm. Okay, Eric, thank you for your investigative reporting, and that's really what this was this time. Really appreciate it. Folks, I want to close with just a word or two that's kind of looking up, because in light of the perilous times we have talked about, we really need to follow the biblical mandate to make God the stability of our times, and to say with the psalmist, I trust in you, O Lord, our times are in your hands. And in the meantime, look back and thank him, look around and serve him, look ahead and trust him, and always look up and expect him. He's coming again.
If you want to hear more from Congresswoman Michelle Bachman, Eric Barger, and Jan Markell, there is a web bonus available online at olivetreeviews.org. If you'd like our mailing address, it is Olive Tree Ministries, Post Office Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota 55311, or call our office at 763-559-4444. That's 763-559-4444. 4444. Understanding the Times Radio with Jan Markell is heard each week at this time.